This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The results of a McLean County transportation survey are in and show the public's willingness to invest in new technology or thinking of the transportation system as a driver for innovation is lagging. The survey will be used in part to develop the 2017 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, which projects two decades into the future. In the studio is McLean County Regional Planning Commission Transportation Planner Jennifer Six. Jennifer, thanks for your time on Sound Ideas.
Happy to be here, Mike.
Before we move into this interview, I need to disclose that I'm the acting chair of the Connect Transit Board of Trustees and a founding member of the bicycle advocacy organization Bike Blono. We'll get to some bike and bus questions a little later. How are you interpreting this reluctance to invest in new technology, and what does the McLean County Regional Planning Commission do with this information as it develops its transportation plan?
Well, I think we have two reactions to this particular finding, one of which is that there's a longstanding and fairly widespread reluctance to spend in this community. And we've seen that in a number of ways. And we've certainly seen it with respect to the transportation system. You mentioned transit. That's certainly one example. The other thing we've decided is that in some of these questions, it represents insufficient understanding on the part of the people who took the survey. And there were lots of them. We were really pleased with that in what we were talking about. So when we gave examples, they were kind of a little bit out there, and people weren't comfortable with that in terms of thinking ahead. So we have to do a better job, and we're thinking about how to do that in explaining what we mean, talking about what the possibilities are, getting out into the public and making everyone comfortable with the notion that things are going to change. There's no way we stop that. And we have to be ready to assimilate those changes.
Were the results in this area, gauging respondents' willingness to see investments in technology, gathered in the question about spending the fictional $100 on transportation issues?
That was part of it. It's also kind of a broader look at the results of the priorities question, which was the one where we offered four options and said, which of these, you know, do you think is the way transportation should function in our community? But primarily, it was the $100 divvied up question.
And it finished last in that, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, it depended. If you break it out a little bit more, it kind of varies. There are some interesting differences going on there. But most of what we found was that, again, there was an unfamiliarity with what this referred to, and I think that made people sort of reluctant to deal with it. And the other problem was that...
So did you need to get more specific when it came to the phrase technology, about what kind of technology asking about?
That would probably have helped. We were trying to keep it short and sweet, so that caused some difficulties. The other thing we determined, at least I've determined, is that the nature of the question, the way it was structured, that same sort of process is what we use in planning meetings, charrettes, whatever, to try and draw people in and participate. So you hand them monopoly money and say, okay, here's how much you've got to work with. Here are the list of things that have to happen. You figure out where to spend the money. It turns out that doesn't work so well as a written question. And a lot of people were confused by how it was set up and, you know, the fact that it didn't divide evenly and things like that. So we'll find a better way to do that in the future. But in the meantime, we have to take it with a slight grain of salt just because of the lower response level on that particular question.
There's no doubt this is a very car-centric community. 85% agree it's easy to get around the community in a car. How do the results of this survey compare with past survey results as it concerns this mode of transportation?
Well, it's pretty stable. And if anything, there's a tiny little decrease in people who opt for it. But for the most part, it's not so much that people have stopped using their cars. It's more that they occasionally use some other mode. And we see that ever so slightly in the data. I think we would have to do a much more intensive and broader survey to really know for sure that that was true.
So there's a minor shift to multimodal.
Yeah. And I think part of that is the greater relationship that people understand between using bicycles and using transit and the availability of connections between the two. But I'm not seeing a huge change yet, and we have to wait and see what kind of trends develop and how well we can model them in terms of actual numbers versus a survey with a small sample.
I think it's surprising that 38% of the respondents don't think it's safe to walk to an important destination. Is that because of the prevalence of cars, or is it the built environment?
From the handful of comments we got on each of these questions, and there weren't anything like the number of comments typed in by people that there were 5 years ago.
But unfamiliarity with walking, maybe.
What's that? Yes, what a concept. I think it was a collection of those things. You did get some references to speeding cars and to the fact that the road itself was a dangerous environment to be in as a pedestrian. I think there was also some safety concern of a more of a personal security issue for people who felt that they were more vulnerable walking and, you know, not being encased in a vehicle of some kind in, you know, various situations, after dark, whatever. When we looked at the data and broke it out a little bit by demographic groups, that particular question was more responded to by women responding rather than men. And when we looked at some of the other data, some of the other questions, there was the one sort of notable thing was a gender split.
And I have some questions about
that. Okay, good.
We'll get to that. As it concerns the built environment, let's talk about Veterans Parkway for a moment. Were there any comments or anything in the survey that gauged sort of what people thought of their access on this roadway or access across this roadway?
It's funny. We heard that somewhat 5 years ago. I didn't really run into that this time because I think people have kind of given up on the idea of getting across Veterans Parkway or finding it as a congenial environment or even an adaptable environment for non-motorized transit or travel. And we've had conversations for years now about some sort of trail installation in that area. And it's really difficult to figure out where you could put it and how you could get it across intersections. You know, the one example we have goes under, and you can only do that so often.
We talked about this survey back in October when the responses were still being gathered. Here's what you said about the bicycle as a mode of transportation during that interview.
They're cheap, they're practical, or they can be cheap. They are person-driven rather than requiring fuel, which is always a good thing. And we already see that they are popular. There's no reason why that would change given the trends we tend to see.
So what role do you think they'll play in a future transportation system in Bloomington Normal?
We have the beginnings of a good bicycle network. Part of it, obviously, the Constitution Trail is off-road, but we're starting to play with the idea of using street networks as bicycle facilities as well as cars. They already are. It's just that we need to make sure everyone recognizes that.
That's Jennifer Six with the McLean County Regional Planning Commission from October of 2016. And she's in the studio now. Nearly a quarter of respondents had no opinion regarding bikes as transportation. What do you make of that?
I make of that that they came from the group that is in the 85% or such that primarily use cars and haven't thought, you know, they may use the trail, they may use other forms of non-motorized transportation, but they're not seeing it in the context we would like to see, which is as a fully equal method of transportation that should be considered in all of our decisions. We have to do that. The local governments have to do that. It's required so that they can get access to funding. And we have to be able to demonstrate that. But for the general public, I think it's still a work in progress in terms of making that leap into understanding that approach. We were hoping to be able to do a project on a section of Main Street, sort of looking at a specific segment and deciding how we could adapt it to make it more multimodal, more useful for transit, and also incorporating bike lanes or some other sort of bike accommodation. Unfortunately, the funding did not come through, but we still have it on our minds, and IDOT still has it on theirs.
So it's a demonstration project of sorts?
Certainly is a beginning of looking at Main Street in a new way and considering how its function has changed over the years and how it can become a different kind of, you know, thoroughfare for people who use it in town as well as people who come through.
Any idea when that might happen or could happen?
It's really difficult to predict. We are in the midst of like several sea changes in transportation funding and policy making.
From the federal level to the state level to the local level.
All the way. I mean, the most stable is the local level. We know what we want. We've talked about it for years. People have seen things and said, yeah, we want more of that. And this is just another iteration of that process. The problem is this stuff is not cheap. And we have to make sure that we can support the projects we want to do with the appropriate funding. And right now, you know, we just heard from the president a discussion of his proposed $1 trillion infrastructure rebuilding project. But there is very, very little detail, virtually no detail on how that would be funded and how much of it would be private, how much public.
Well, President Trump is an idea guy, not a detail guy. I think that's been established.
True. And when you're talking about $1 trillion, the mind starts to boggle a little bit and teasing out the details. Unfortunately, the one thing we have heard about that is that there's expected to be a de-emphasis on transit funding, which is a not good thing. And I hope that members of Congress who are involved in that will step in.
Well, let's talk about transit. There was a wide disparity when it came to transit's numbers in this response. 40% unfamiliar, generally,
yeah.
And then the other 20% split pretty hard either way on they use it and like it or don't like it and don't use it. Can you talk a little bit about transit?
I think in terms of those who express what might have been interpreted as a negative opinion, we're really much more in the I'm not familiar with it, I haven't had occasion to use it, therefore I don't understand it kind of bin, if you will. And, you know, I think Connect Transit has made some effort in the last couple of years to push against that and say, look, you can use this for other types of, you know, things than the absolute necessity. As far as the people who sort of have no opinion at all, I think that pretty much falls in the same group.
Back to the 85% who drive most of the time.
Yeah, and, you know, that is a tough number to work against because, and I have to confess, I'm guilty of this too. It is so, because it is so easy to get around in a car, the temptation for most of us who do have options, to who have the choice to do that, is to do it because it's faster and easier.
So looking at those Connect Transit numbers, the survey responses, is there an opportunity there of some sort?
Absolutely.
And what
no
is
question.
That?
I think with people getting accustomed to the big changes that happened last year, and you know we're at another transition point for Connect Transit since Andrew Johnson's leaving, and at some point there'll be a replacement, and we'll have a chance to see what ideas whoever that person is brings in. And I know that this will be a challenge for the board as well as all of you look towards how you want to proceed from here on out. That will tell us something about how we can proceed and where the emphasis is going to be. And once the state situation stabilizes, or so we hope, the continuing flow of the state contribution to the operating costs will stabilize, and that will give everyone a better sense of how to proceed. Across the state, there are transit agencies, large and small, in virtual paralysis because they have no idea when the next check's going to arrive. And that's what pays the staff, the drivers, pays maintenance on the buses, the whole nine yards. So without that being settled in some substantive way that everyone feels confident in, we're not going to have a chance to make those decisions.
It's pretty clear that people in the community think the roads need attention. Do they really need attention? Some are good, some are bad, but some people are more critical than others. The roads they travel could be worse than the roads in the rest of the community. Is that really a good gauge of the condition of the road network in the community?
It's not, because everyone has their own bias about, you know, what decisions they want to make for their own path through the community. And yes, there are some locations where the roads are in fairly lousy shape or where there's been some sort of situation arising. We've had water main breaks and that kind of thing that have created a sudden need to make big repairs. Sure, there are potholes. It depends on a lot of factors. Overall, and the city of Bloomington in particular has really documented this very carefully, and they have all of it's posted on their website, and you can actually go take a look. And The real constraint, once again, is money. Jim Karch, the public works director, a couple of years ago did a presentation to the city council about the enormous gap between the projects that they would like to do or need to do to get the road system up to the standard the council wants and how much it would actually cost to do that. And it's a big gap between what you can do and what would be preferable to do to meet that standard.
And we may see more in the next Bloomington budget. They're looking serious at repaving projects in the community. People were pretty clear about keeping the current transportation network in good condition. I want to ask you about that, but also there was a difference in how men and women answered this particular question.
That one has me a little baffled, frankly, although I think it's again, whether or not people feel comfortable with the idea of change that's got a price tag attached to it. In a larger sense, I think some of this flows from the fact that in the Bloomington Comprehensive Plan that we did a couple of years ago, one of the sort of big changes was looking at a much narrower land use area for future development, simply because there's an enormous amount of land available already without going out all over the place. And normally, we think it's going to head in a similar direction as we finish the normal plan later this year. So right there, you've got an indication of why it's possible to move forward with the system substantially unchanged and certainly not expanded widely, but it would still be functional. It would still do what it needed to do.
How did men and women answer that question differently?
I'm trying to remember.
There was, for women, it was, I think, the second highest response. And for men, it was the first. And what was the question what was the option that women ranked at the top?
Women actually, it was sort of interesting. Women started with improving public transit and special services from public transit. And all the way through, and there are a variety of ways in which you can sort of take this apart and look at the options, but women, especially as they got older, seemed to be more interested in access to kind of collective transportation, public transit, you know, rideshare, that kind of thing.
That's not a surprise.
No, absolutely.
Empty nesters and older Americans are certainly looking for options for transportation that don't involve them driving the car.
And I also think that there's a component, once again, of a a sense of enhanced personal safety. Not only do you not want to drive, even if assuming you have the option, because that too becomes more dangerous as time goes on. But the idea of having other people around has something to do with it too, I think, and that's where we started to see the split. It's much more pronounced after, say, age 50, maybe 60, in the split. Although men also become more inclined to favor, again, those group forms of transportation as they get older.
Millennials have been a driving force and will continue to be a force. It's the largest generation alive and making up a big chunk of the McLean County population, more than 50% of the population of the town of Normal. The leading edge of this generation is growing up. They're having families, maybe buying different kinds of housing. What are we learning, maybe not entirely from this survey, about their transportation choices?
There's still a little bit of a divergence, but we're talking about population cohorts that are still relatively broad. And if you talk about, we really have to start talking about millennials in two different groups, the very young adults who are the tail end, and then the, you know, people in their 30s who are now the leading edge. And as you say, are moving into a different phase of life than when a lot of the research was done, unfortunately. So I think we're, part of what we're looking for is people who are out looking at this generation again, particularly that older section, and saying, okay, are they doing what they said they would do? Are they doing what we predicted they would do, which is holding on to a more urban neighborhood as a preference, minimizing car ownership, all that stuff? And we don't know yet, because they're just starting to get into the point where that would be something we could measure. And that's something where we rely on the profession to sort of come back to us and say, we've done surveys here and we've done studies there and we've run the numbers and done the statistics and here's what we think is happening.
Could it be that this leading edge is being forced into choices that they don't want to make, that there isn't the housing available for them at the price that they want to have a family of three or four? Or, you know, and then that, where they live, would then would have to influence their transportation choice, because if they live in a house in the Heather Ridge subdivision in Northeast Normal, they have to have a car.
Right. I think that's part of it. We've started to see a real shift in my understanding of the views of the real estate community, in that they're now acknowledging that the kind of housing that we build here, going back decades, really, but certainly there was a boom period in the 90s and the early 2000s, that's not going to work anymore. It's too big. It's too expensive. It's too hard to maintain. And families are smaller than that. They don't need, you know, great massive structures. They don't need roofs that are going to cost $50,000 to fix. That's just nuts. So we're still making that transition, and people are still trying to figure out how to do that in a way that's attractive and that people can understand. And that's very much a moving target at this point. But I think that shift will happen. And as people find that they have wider choices and more affordable choices, and that's something that's very much on the minds of our community planning staff as they look at how this will work over the next 10 years, certainly, and how it works in terms of that preference that we've thought we established with respect to what we call the millennial generation. Giving them options may give them the option to keep up with what they believed when they were 20.